You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we've returned here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This podcast is brought to you by OnlineGambling.com, the place to be for all the latest gambling news and tips throughout the NFL playoffs. Visit OnlineGambling.com/NFL to get the edge over the competition throughout this year's playoffs. We're back here. It's a midweek edition of the show. And today, to answer all of your mailbag questions, we have a ton of them to dive into today. It's Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, you've had Taco Tuesdays, Taco Thursdays. Now we're at Taco Wednesday. How are you doing today?
Tacos every day, baby. I'm doing fantastic. Ravens making some moves. Got a great slate of divisional round football games we got to watch. One of the best weekends of NFL football that I think many can remember. So I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You know, hoping that the Ravens in this offseason can figure stuff out. Looking at these top-tier teams in the AFC, I think Baltimore's in that category, but the ones who are in the playoffs this season. Ravens do have some work to do both on offense and on defense. They are now already, as you talked about, making moves as they part ways with defensive coordinator Don Martindale. Spence, we have a ton of questions, and we got a ton of questions for today's mailbag. I'm not sure if we're going to get through all of them, and if we don't, we'll talk about them throughout the rest of the week. So it's not that we're ignoring it. We're going to get to them. It just might not be on today's episode. We'll get to as many as we can here. But Spencer, I actually want to start off with a mailbag question of my own, because we didn't get one about Antonio Brown, and it's a very hot topic. It's been one over the past, I don't even know how long, Spencer. You and I have had conversations about Antonio Brown for months and months and months. Stuff comes up. Well, the latest thing is that Antonio Brown on the I Am Athlete podcast says that he wants to play with Lamar Jackson next. And Spencer, whenever we talk about Antonio Brown, we always say, look, he's a great player on the football field, but off the field, he has a laundry list of issues, from legal troubles to what we saw just a couple weeks ago in Tampa, where he storms off the field. Tampa cuts him right there. There's no doubt that he would help this team on the field. But Spencer, off of it again, with every conversation we have, it just seems like the fit off the field is going to be too much for this team to, I think, take a flyer on.
Yeah, the volatility is very high risk, high reward. There's mixed signals, mixed reactions. And Antonio Brown, to me, I mean, I love him in fantasy football. I think if he is on the football field, he's one of, you know, maybe the 10 best receivers in the NFL. If you want to argue five, I'm not going to raise an eyebrow at you. He is still that talented. His ability to separate, his ability to run through the catch, everything that he does, he's a completely dynamic talent. But everywhere he has gone, trouble has followed, save one season, being able to be a good soldier in Tampa Bay last year and makes it through. And heck, I mean, might have costed the Bucs a Super Bowl run here. And some people side with him and, you know, saying that the Mayock and Gruden situation was bad. And then you see those guys end up out eventually and not having a successful tenure overall. And then Bruce Arians was forcing him back on the field and was aggressive. And then you see, you know, some shades of that as well. But he's also had off the field, outside of football drama as well. The other monkey wrench there is that he is Marquise Brown's cousin and is obviously a South Florida guy, grew up in Miami and has a close relationship with his cousin, Marquise Brown, as well as Lamar Jackson. So the juice versus the squeeze, is it worth it? It's hard to gauge. If you can get 1 year of Antonio Brown playing for, you know, $5 million, $7 million or something like that, and have him be a healthy and willing teammate, then that's an incredible move. But what is the likelihood of that happening? Doesn't seem terribly high.
Right. The Ravens have had success with, you know, taking players who are known as, you know, troubles off the field and kind of letting them, you know, kind of feel their way out and having good careers where they're not distractions. But Antonio Brown, it's a different story. I feel like maybe you can get that out of him. I'm not saying that it's completely impossible. If there is a team that I think can get the most out of him and kind of be okay with him off the field and get him under control there, I think it would be the Ravens and their culture they've established. But bringing him in, it would be interesting if they did. You know, John Harbaugh kind of answered some questions back in July of the 2021 offseason when Lamar Jackson said that he'd be happy to play with Antonio Brown. And he said, look, I don't think he's available right now because he was going through something off the field. And it just seems like those things keep popping up. So on the field, I mean, he'd be a great addition, as you talked about. But off of it, that's where the key question marks are and where I'm still, you know, very hesitant to say the Ravens would even consider signing him. But Spencer, the move of Don Martindale, I think, is the bigger one here. The Ravens parting ways with him after four seasons, after having some very good defensive units. And we got a ton of mailbag questions about it. And we'll start off here with a question from aNikki622, who says, now that Wink is gone, I'm assuming they will consider building a defense with a front focused on getting pressure with four. Are there any free agents, Spencer, that you see them bringing in that will help our front, or should we bring back our own free agent players? It is interesting because part of the things that we've talked about before is the Ravens scheming up those pressures. They've had difficulty getting pressure with four or with five, and it's been very inconsistent, or it was with Martindale. So are there any guys on the free agent market, Spencer, that you could see the Ravens bringing in to help, or do you think this will be more of they want to re-sign their own guys and run it back this offseason?
I certainly think that the Ravens are looking for some new blood defensively. I believe that they're going to attempt to bring in a safety of some sort with the coordinators or the pass game coordinators or DBs coaches that they've interviewed in Joe Witt Jr. and Chris, whose name's escaping me for some reason.
Is it Richard? Yeah.
Yeah, Chris Richard from the Saints. Both of those are cover one, cover three, middle of the field closed guys. And thinking that, you know, the Ravens did sign Earl Thomas and had Marcus Peters on one side, Marlon Humphrey on the other side. They masterfully played match man and cover three in that 2019 season. They produced an EPA per play of minus 0.15, meaning that teams were losing about an eighth of a point every time they played against the Ravens cover three and threw the ball. That the Ravens want to go in that direction. And Wink Martindale has gotten away from that a little bit. They didn't quite have that rangy safety to be able to play that true middle of the field. There's not a ton of those in the NFL necessarily, but when you look around in free agency, there's a couple that certainly could be answers there. You look to the number one for me is Marcus Williams, the Saints free safety, who has been with Chris Richard for the last couple of years and has been a splash playmaker with a ton of range and is a taller, kind of lankier mover that probably is going to get a pretty big contract there, but you know, he's a 6'1", 200-pound guy that can move and make plays in the middle of the field and is able to come downhill and make some plays as well. So I think he's a really interesting option to fill that role, especially in that system. Marcus May, Quandre Diggs, another couple of names there. So I think that the Ravens are going to go out and try and bring in one of those guys. Overall, you know, Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, we'll see what happens there. He is 30. He will be going on to like his fourth contract now, as he did have a one-year contract. So maybe is able to go play somewhere else if the Chiefs are not able or willing to retain him. And then again, Quandre Diggs coming out of that similar Seahawks defense, that's that same middle of the field closed defense. So I think that bringing a safety is going to be really key. And then you're going to want to go look at the tackle position. And aside from, you know, center, but Cam Robinson, I think, is a really intriguing name to me. We'll see what happens in terms of the Jaguars bringing him back or not. Also with Sean Payton leaving, it feels like Teron Armstead could go elsewhere. He has missed, I think, 12 games in the last 3 years. Trent Brown also set to become a free agent. He has missed some snaps as well. So a little bit of volatility there. But I think that, you know, Morgan Moses, another good name. So it's interesting to see which of these guys doesn't end up back with their team. And I think there's some good options along the offensive line, but on that defense as well.
Yeah, and even on the defensive line, you know, where the Ravens could invest there, like, I think Larry Ogunjobi would be a good fit. Emmanuel Ogba kind of as a rusher is somebody who I've liked for a very long time. Some of those players as well. But I think overall, you know, we will see some type of either medium to big turnover in terms of who's coming in, who's going out. The Ravens don't have, you know, the most cap space in the league to work with. They don't have absolutely nothing. But, you know, they're going to have to figure out who wants to come to Baltimore for maybe a little bit less money than they'd get in, I don't know, a Jacksonville or somewhere else that has a ton of cap space to work with over there. But, Spencer, in your opinion, we have a question here from Isaac. Are there replacement options available for hire or elevation that are realistically a better defensive coordinator than Wink? And so, obviously, your definition of better might be different than mine and different than everybody's, but in terms of Martindale, he showed that with the personnel he was given, he could get a lot out of it. Now, there were flaws, but is there anybody who on the market, whether it's an outside guy or someone who's already on the coaching staff, that you could confidently say, hey, this person is either right now a better coordinator or could be a better coordinator than Don Martindale for this Ravens defense?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Sean Payton on his way out. But the first name that comes to mind that is a little bit outside and someone that's generated some head coaching buzz is also a former head coach for the Oakland Raiders from 2012 to 2014 is Dennis Allen. And Dennis Allen has been among the most effective coordinators in the league the last couple of years, been able to stifle Tom Brady quite a bit, able to do some really interesting things, their run defense, their pass defense, generating turnovers, generating sacks, a really complete and thorough defense that hasn't really had a consistent offense to pair with it. Drew Brees lost his, you know, arm strength. They ran a offense that was a little more sophisticated version of what we saw in Pittsburgh with a limited quarterback in terms of pushing the ball downfield. And then, you know, Jameis Winston came in on fire a little bit. The Saints look like a contender. And then he ends up tearing his ACL and unable to go. So that defense has kept the Saints around. It was talented, but at the same time, I think that Dennis Allen is someone that I would point to as someone who's probably going to create more buzz right now for having a more modern defense a little bit and being able to be more balanced than what we saw with Wink Martindale overall. In terms of, you know, being a better option, I don't know that there are a ton. The only other one name that comes to mind for me might be maybe Jim Leonard. Out of Wisconsin, but from all accords, I've heard that he is pretty happy with his family settled in Madison. He went to Wisconsin, so has his ties there and his roots there. And I don't know if there's anyone other than that who's going to be distinguishedly better necessarily, but Joe Witt and Chris Richard, the two guys that they did interview, have a ton of respect, particularly Witt, who is supposed to get a ton of defensive coordinator buzz, who has also spoken about how the Dallas Cowboys are a dream job for him as well. So overall, I wouldn't go say there's a shoe-in guy, maybe beyond Dennis Allen, that's a real improvement there, but we'll see.
Yeah, plenty of options for sure. And the Ravens, of course, are already interviewing a couple of their candidates, and Justine Anderson reporting that the Ravens would like to have a decision in the week upcoming here or the next coming weeks, of course. But with Martindale gone, it gives the Ravens an opportunity to shift around their defensive identity and figure out what their personnel is truly best for and figure it all out from there. We'll head into our first break, though. When we get back, we'll be talking about more mailbag questions, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. We're all looking for an edge these days, and I'd like to thank OnlineGambling.com for sponsoring today's podcast. So, Ravens fans, if you don't know already, OnlineGambling.com is a website dedicated to giving bettors the edge throughout the playoffs. They're providing you with the best NFL tips, news, and more to help make you as informed as ever. Now, for my Super Bowl picks, I had the Chiefs and Rams, and I'm still going strong here. It wasn't a shoe-in over divisional weekend, I'd say. Some very amazing end of games, but all in all, I'm still going strong here at the beginning of the playoffs. The expert at OnlineGambling.com, they asked me to show my prediction skills, and I mean, hey, I've done it, Chiefs and Rams there, so I'm not changing my picks. I'm sticking with it, and if you want to go with me there, I highly recommend you do. But if you're planning on placing a bet during the playoffs, make sure you head to OnlineGambling.com before you do. Online gambling gives bettors the edge by providing the best and most trusted experience online all day, every day. That includes their OG tip section, where you'll find their own Super Bowl picks as well as an inside track on how to beat the odds throughout the NFL playoffs. Make sure you visit OnlineGambling.com/NFL for the latest gambling news, tips, and odds to give you the edge throughout the playoffs. Remember, OnlineGambling.com/NFL to make the most of this year's playoffs. We're back here with our second segment of a Wednesday edition of Locked On Ravens with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. I am Kevin Ostreicher. And Spencer, diving back into these mailbag questions, you have a lot of guys who I think wanted to see change. And we have now gotten that with the parting of ways, I'll say, of Don Martindale. But part of that comes, I think, a scheme change. And a question here from Space Ghost asks, should we switch to a 4-3? Every team remaining kind of runs one where the defensive tackles get constant pressures and the edge guys hunt. Feel like Owe would do well, maybe Trevon Walker in rounds 1-2. But I want to put that in with another question that we got here from Kevin, not me, another Kevin, who says, a lot of people seem to think the 4-3 is the current top-tier strategy, but confuse it with a 4-2-5. Personally, I think we have the personnel to make that switch rather easily. Wolf, Medebike, Owe, McPhee, Jay Ferg, defensive lineman, Harrison Queen, Bouncer linebackers, need a rangy safety with Clark and Brandon Stevens. And we have the cornerbacks to stay with anyone. The idea has also crossed my mind if we draft Sauce to let Peters go to free safety Stevens, Nickelback safety Sauce, and Humphrey outside. So a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to unpack there. But Spencer, do you think that this Ravens defense would be better off, depending on obviously who the coordinator is, switching to more of a 4-3 or 4-2-5 scheme?
So against a 4-2-5, or excuse me, against 11 personnel. The Ravens are going to run a 4-2-5 a lot of the time. We'll see them mug a linebacker and a dime backer up over the line, over the A gaps, and get pressure that way, or attempt to get pressure that way, or something of the sort. So it's really personnel matching. The Ravens do, you know, use a two gapping system at times against base personnel. We see them run some four-man fronts, some five-man fronts. They've been a hybrid defense for a long time. I think a lot of people kind of just look at Madden and get some ideas a little bit. But, yeah, you know, it's more of kind of playing the pass versus playing the run primarily, and aiming to attack upfield and penetrate in a one-gap scheme, so to speak, a little bit more. It doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, a four- or five-man front, 40 or 50, whatever you want to call it, to do that. So there are multiple ways to skin the cat there. I mean, the Steelers run a five-man front that it has one two-gapping player and everyone else single gaps. There's a lot of ways to do it. So I think that overall the changes are going to be a little bit more towards what the Ravens do on known passing downs. I think would be the biggest difference in a new coordinator would be, you know, playing more, you know, two high versus playing more single high, staying balanced, trying to disguise more, trying to disguise less, how much they're using cover three and man match versus how much they're running cover two and cover four and cover six, things like that. So it's a little bit different, a little bit more nuanced, but overall, you know, you do want to see personnel wise, the Ravens get a nose guard that can penetrate a little bit better and attack a little bit more. Wink Martindale is very open about, you know, they want to stop the run, make teams one dimensional. And this year that didn't go well for them because they struggled to tackle. They struggled to communicate well in the back end. They had a lot of blown coverages, blown assignments that led to big plays and touchdowns. So finally, you know, the Ravens did run cover zero, I think the most of any team in the NFL, 29 times in 2021. So something that becomes kind of a hot button topic because it produces very polarizing results, touchdowns, sacks, incompletions, interceptions. It's, you know, a big play either way a lot of the time. And it felt like the Ravens were really cutting edge with how much they were using zero pressure a couple of years ago. And now you look around the league and a lot of teams are running it, you know, mixing it in a little bit. And quarterbacks have come to be more familiar with it overall, as well as the fact that veteran quarterbacks and high level mental quarterbacks are not scared of it. They've seen it. They have answers for it. They have multiple answers for it. They have signals for it. They are confident in how to beat it. We saw former Bengal Andy Dalton beat the Ravens cover zero, and we saw current Bengal Joe Burrow beat the cover zero. And the Bengals are now the team to beat, and it looks like that is not going to be the recipe for how to defeat Joe Burrow is with those, you know, pressures. You want to get him to hold the ball a little bit, drop his eyes, get pressure there a little bit more so. So there's a personnel discussion to be had there, and there's also a strategy discussion to be had there.
Right, and I think some of the reasons why this parting of ways happened, you know, Albert Breer and I think a couple others reported that there were just some philosophical differences, and Don Martindale being the aggressive blitzing defensive coordinator that he is, maybe just didn't want to go super far away from what that was. But a question from Mr. Rivero says, do you think one of the differences between Wink and John Harbaugh was their continued problem generating sacks and getting turnovers? And something I've talked about, Spencer, is the Ravens over the past couple of seasons have, relative to other teams, been a very high pressure but low sack team, where the sacks are coming very inconsistently, where they'll have that 8 sack or 6 sack performance and then have like 2 sacks in the next 4 games or something like that. So do you think that this was part of the Ravens saying we just need to generate more pressure without blitzing?
It's kind of a loaded question because you can generate pressure without blitzing, but you can also force quarterbacks to hold the ball longer by dedicating more coverage bodies and by confusing quarterbacks in terms of lining up in a too high shell with two safeties, looking like a split safety coverage, and then walking one down as a robber and forcing a quarterback to, you know, come off of their first read, feel a little bit of pressure, drop their eyes, and then you're able to go get that sack a little bit more so. And I think if you go look at maybe like TJ Watt, who Ravens fans would loathe to have, a lot of his sacks come exactly that way. You know, he finishes 3+ seconds into the play. So I think the Ravens need to get a little bit better in terms of finishing there. They did aim to get free rushers. We've heard Wink Martindale talk about their goal was to, you know, have all 11 guys be able to bring pressure. And whether that's from simulating pressure with a creeper blitz where they only rush four, but one of them's a nickel or a linebacker, or maybe two of them are, versus, you know, a 5 or 6 man pressure, versus a 4-man rush where you're stunting. So again, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I think that sacks are very volatile overall. Having a premier pass rusher tends to lead to more sacks. Having Aaron Donald tends to lead to more sacks. Having TJ Watt tends to lead to more sacks. Miles Garrett, you know, you can go down the list of guys that do it so well. But again, from the previous point, some of it is also tied to how dedicated you are at stopping the run versus trying to pressure. Kirby Smart frequently talks about going low gear and coming off the ball really slowly and allowing guys to, you know, play the run, keep the play in front of them versus gunning back, pinning your ears back and getting after it. So again, there's just different philosophies, different ways to do it. I think the Ravens are going to try and lean towards more of a maybe modern or traditional look. And I think the Ravens should try to model what Tennessee does, having a really balanced attack that still uses simulated pressure, but ultimately is able to mix up coverages and still dedicate 6, 7, 8 bodies in coverage.
Yeah, and there's a lot that goes into it, but a question from Kale Simon asked, the Ravens have always promoted from within for coordinator positions, but is it time to look outside of the organization, or is the best option already in the building? And so there are differences between finding a guy from inside the organization who has been there, who understands kind of maybe what the team's looking for and has been around the players and the personnel, but also going outside the organization, there are plenty of talented options on a bunch of different teams. And, you know, Kale's right there. The Ravens historically have not hired from outside. They've put guys in the positions to be elevated throughout the organization to the coordinator positions. Spencer, do you think that now is the time? We've talked about some of the options, but do you think now is the time for the Ravens to, instead of maybe promoting a guy from inside the organization, that they should look from outside of it?
I think the Ravens need to look outside. It feels like they need a blood transfusion defensively after a year that left them in some turmoil, left them dissatisfied with the results. They were unable to get a stop defensively time and time again, as well as able to kind of punch the ball in for the winning play on both sides of the ball. But it feels like they need someone who maybe is a little more hands-on, a little bit louder, a little bit more involved. Anthony Weaver looks like the in-house option. The Ravens did conduct a formal interview with him. It wouldn't be surprising at all to see him get the job, but that kind of is an outside move. He's only been there for 1 year. So I think that it's going to be a lot of fresh faces. I don't think there's going to be Rob Ryan next year. We'll see what happens with Chris Hewitt as the passing coordinator and DB's coach back there. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I think the Ravens do need blood transfusion personnel-wise as well as on the coaching staff. They did lose Mike McDonald last year, who they felt was, you know, one of the best defensive minds out there and a guy that is really well-respected in the football community. And they also lose Joe Cullen. They also lose Zach Orr. So they got picked apart a little bit, brought in some new faces and Rob Ryan and Anthony Weaver, among others. And again, that's going to be the same message. So it feels like they need to kind of let some of those old dogs lay out back in terms of, you know, Pernell McPhee maybe, or Brandon Williams, or Jimmy Smith, and kind of try and go get some new personnel, as well as bring in a new, fresh plan to reinvigorate some of these defensive players as well, and see if you can't maximize guys like Justin Houston and Patrick Queen and some of these other younger players that have shown so much potential but also struggled with consistency. So maybe getting someone that's a little bit more involved will allow that to happen. Someone who's a little bit younger and hungrier and louder and can relate in a different way, because it feels like, again, they were so complex and exotic and all those buzzwords, and they were cutting edge in 2018 and 2019. And now it was kind of, you know, something shiny that lost its luster, and now they need something new.
Right. And you mentioned the exotics in that part of that defense. Well, I know for one, if the Ravens move away from that, and it seems like they're probably going to, I'm not going to miss like Pernell McPhee dropping back into coverage and having to cover Tyreek Hill or Justin Houston. I mean, there was early controversy about Justin Houston dropping back into coverage. It's like, well, why are you dropping him back? When I think that the one game we talked about that, Spencer, he dropped back like 2 times. But again, it's kind of those situational things where it's super cool to see like Calais Campbell drop back into coverage, like in the Cleveland game, the first play of that game in 2020. Or the first drive of that game in 2020. But at the same time, I think the Ravens want to just go to somebody who will help maximize the skills of their defenders. And they just didn't feel like Martindale was that guy anymore. It seemed like we'll head into our final break, though. When we get back, we'll continue talking about coordinators and a bit more with more mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Hey Ravens fans, this is Kevin Allstreicher with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about and get upside. Just download the app for free in the App Store or Google Play and use promo code TOUCHDOWN for 25 cents per gallon or more on your first fill-up. getting cash back. Don't pay a full price of the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use promo code Touchdown for 25 cents per gallon or more on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot is making as much as $200 to $300 a month a year in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back is added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or any gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code Touchdown to get 25 cents per gallon or more cash back on your first tank. That's code Touchdown. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthy, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, and they contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. And there are so many flavors to choose from, so go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. We're back here with our final segment of this Taco Wednesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, we've talked a lot about Don Martindale in this Ravens now vacant defensive coordinator position, but let's talk a little bit about some other stuff. And I first want to talk about a question that's an interesting one here from Eric Clark, who asks, which vet slash rookie combo would you like more? Bobby Wagner and Trayvon Walker or Fletcher Cox and N'Kobe Dean?
Say those again for me.
Yeah, so Eric asks, Bobby Wagner and Trayvon Walker or Fletcher Cox and N'Kobe Dean?
Oh, that is a tough one. Wow, so Trayvon Walker to me right now would be a really nice pairing with an Odafe away. Bobby Wagner is a player that I've been talking about for a while, just in terms of being able to be that leader in the middle of the defense, bring that winning culture, kind of change the shift the locker room a little bit. But at this point, it's difficult for the Ravens to keep relying on 30-plus-year-old vets that probably aren't going to have a long tenure to come in and be the Calais Campbells or the, Pernell McPhees of the Ravens locker room. And you'd like to see that kind of occur organically. I mean, Fletcher Cox would provide them with an extremely disruptive presence inside to move on from Calais Campbell. N'Kobe Dean, to me, is very similar to Patrick Queen. I think that you've got two guys that can run in space really well, but are going to struggle to take on blocks at times and get washed out. I think that Bobby would pair a little bit better. And I do really like Trayvon Walker. So I'm going to go Bobby Wagner and Trayvon Walker. I think Walker is an unfinished player. He's a 5-star. I do have some concerns about why he has not been able to speed up his pass rush a little bit at this point. He has great length. He has outstanding functional strength. He's an incredible athlete. He has prodigious size overall. You can move him, 3-tech, even 1-tech, all the way to outside linebacker. But at this point, I'm just curious as to why his pass rush hasn't sped up in terms of hand usage. He's able to use a really nice bull rush. And if he would just play off of his bull rush by using a push-pull where he rips your jersey down over top of you like a snatch, being able to disengage with that a little bit more, or just adding a rip in off of it, or a swipe, I think we'd be talking about a top in consensus kind of top 5 player. I know that Dane Brugler has him as a top 10 player in this draft, the Athletics kind of draft guru. So I think that's an intriguing combination. And I think I would ultimately go with Walker and Wagner.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to. I think Fletcher Cox is one heck of a player, and he's shown that he is over the course of his career. But if you're bringing in a guy like Fletcher Cox and then having a young linebacker like a Dean, I mean, those are two great players who could really help out. But I do see the similarities you're talking about with Queen and Dean being, a little similar there. And plus, if you're drafting Walker, you're getting younger on the defensive line and the front seven in that area. And plus, I think Wagner by himself is just, he's unbelievable. And I think him next to a Patrick Queen type player would be a great combination. So I'm also going with Walker and Wagner, but it is actually very close. I think both pairings are actually really good. But let's talk about now the interesting conversation behind the overtime rules. Spencer, the overtime rules have gotten a ton of, just flack overall, especially after the ending of that Chiefs and Bills game, the divisional round, a phenomenal game, by the way, gave me the Ravens-Vikings in 2013 vibes. But Patrick Mahomes gets the ball first in overtime. He scores a touchdown. Josh Allen does not touch the football. And that outraged a lot of people because, look, it was a great game overall. And these overtime rules, the Chiefs themselves tried to get them changed after they were on the short end of the stick a couple of years ago when New England scored a touchdown in overtime and they ended up advancing in the playoffs. So a lot of people are saying change the overtime rules, make it so that both quarterbacks can touch the ball at least once or do it for the playoffs. Spencer, do you think the overtime rules need changing?
Overtime rules should, you should always aim to make things quote unquote as fair or as equitable or, you know, as even as possible. But they did just that not too long ago. They altered the rules so that it's not sudden death. It allows the team to get a chance if the team who gets the ball first gets a field goal. But there's always going to be a team that is slighted no matter what the rule is. In college football, I think over the last decade, 62% of teams that have deferred the coin toss have won, because you get the advantage of knowing what the outcome of the first possession was, what the opening offense did. Did they kick a field goal so you can score a touchdown to try to win? You know, did they go three and out so you can just try and kick a field goal quickly? So there's always that advantage there. Even if it's just an entire another quarter, then there's a team who's getting an extra possession by the team that receives the kickoff that will never be reciprocated in a second half, so to speak. At the same time, you're risking injury. You're playing longer. You know, you're tiring your team out, especially in the playoffs, and you're going to have to go play in a conference championship game. You know, for instance, the Chiefs right now, let's say they played an entire fifth quarter and won that game still. The Bengals have an extra day's rest. And how likely is it that another guy gets injured and is unable to play, you know, a key player, a role player, a starter, something of the sort. So there's always going to be pros and cons and disadvantages. You should always try to make it as fair and equitable as possible. But at the end of the day, the rules are the rules. You get it. You know, regulation is for winning the game. Overtime is to decide a winner. I think is a good way of putting it that I've seen out there from Deontay Lee of Pro Football Focus. So I agree with that sentiment, and I do agree. You know, there's alternatives. There's the spot and choose, or the pick and choose, whatever it's called. The Ravens proposed, where one team gets to pick the yard line, the other team gets to pick if they want the ball. There's an auction system where whoever's willing to take the ball further away gets the ball, things like that, that just feel outside of the nature of the game a little bit more so. So, you know, a fifth quarter, sure, I get that. I think a lot more of this drama came from the fact that maybe some people wanted to see the Bills win the AFC Championship and go to the Super Bowl, and wanted to see Josh Allen get his time in the sun, and also wanted to just see, you know, a game that kept going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But thing is, we did see that. So I don't feel like we were robbed of anything. I feel like we saw an incredible game, and defenses exist. As much as people want to try to pretend like they don't, the Bills couldn't get a stop at the end of the game. They couldn't get a stop in overtime. You know, and you argue back that, oh, well, the Chiefs didn't either. Well, sure. But at some point, defense has to matter. Or what is the point of having defense out there? What is the point of why would anyone want to play defense? Why would you want to say, I want to play cornerback, I want to play safety, I want to play linebacker? If everything just goes to continue in favor of offenses all the time forever, I think that's something that's gone far enough already. And I appreciate the quality of a team like the 2012-2013 Baltimore Ravens being able to stop Peyton Manning several times in overtime, pick him off. Corey Graham gets an interception late, sets up a Justin Tucker field goal, and the Ravens win that one. And funnily enough, the Ravens won the coin toss in that game. And guess what? They ended up winning without scoring on the opening possession. So I think that there's just a lot of variables and a lot of nuances that people try to make it too black and white when it's 50 shades of gray. So ultimately, you know, the rule's fine by me. Always try to improve it. But I think that at the end of the day, whatever it is, someone's at a disadvantage either way.
Right. And, you know, looking back at when it was first score wins, the touchdown or field goal, you're not going to understand if you're a team like the Ravens who have Justin Tucker and they get the ball at the 25 or 30 yard line to say, oh, let's get the ball to the opposing 35 and we win the game every single time. Like that can be a little bit more of that conversation. But to have it be that the first team that touches the ball has to score a touchdown, I think that does make it a bit more fair overall in the grand scheme of things. I can understand maybe, like, you know, the coin flip having too much power in terms of who gets the football first. And if it is Mahomes against defenses that have just been giving up touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, like, sure. And there was a 4th-and-15 rule proposed that, you know, if the team converts, then they get the ball first or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was something like that. And some of those other things that eliminate the coin flip in overtime. But I think for what it is now, I think it's fine. I wouldn't be necessarily completely opposed to a change, but I think it's fine the way it is. It's not really a huge deal to me. But Spencer, Jeff Bradley asked an interesting question, that last question from a Big Bird fan, by the way. But Jeff Bradley asked an interesting question about keeping Greg Roman, but not in his current role. He asks, have the Ravens ever thought of keeping Greg Roman as a run play designer and getting someone else to call the plays? He can design plays like the Niners run game, which is elite. He is just bad at calling a game and adapting to defense. So this is essentially asking if Greg Roman would take a demotion. And my answer to this is I see very little, if any, chance that that is a thing. And the Ravens have tried that route before. It hasn't worked. The guy just left. And I think that would be the same thing that happens here with Greg Roman.
Yeah, certainly. I would first say the grass isn't always greener. I would also say that I am a very big fan of Lamar Jackson, always have been. I was ecstatic. I jumped for joy when they drafted him with the 32nd pick. They traded back up, and I said to myself, oh, probably for Darius Geis or someone, not Lamar Jackson. They trade up for him. At the same time, I think that a lot of kind of false narratives get put on Greg Roman, and people are unwilling to acknowledge that sometimes Lamar Jackson doesn't do the right thing, doesn't make the right decision, you know, doesn't take the best option. And neither does anyone in the world. But a lot of people have kind of built this cape on Lamar Jackson that he never does any wrong. And sometimes, you know, Roman gets a little blame. I think that there are fair criticisms about Roman's offense. I think that sometimes, you know, there's a strategic aspect to milking the clock and getting set really quickly and snapping the ball after you milk the clock. And the Ravens definitely buy into time of possession a little bit as a whole. So sometimes they get too close with that. And we've seen them struggle to get play calls in, but that also gets overblown as well. As long as Greg Roman's been the Ravens offensive coordinator, 2019, the Ravens committed 5 delay of games, which ranked 19th in the NFL. So they had 5 throughout the year. In 2020, last year, the Ravens committed 3, which was the 6th fewest in the NFL. Then this year, Tyler Huntley commits 4. They end up committing 8 of them total, which ranked 25th in the NFL. Those is they had the 7th or the yeah, excuse me, the 7th most in the NFL. So 4 of those were Huntley. Was it a UDFA quarterback coming in and making some starts sporadically and having a couple delay games there? So there also has to be urgency. But to me, the biggest issue in Roman's offense is there's just a disconnect in terms of guys being on the same page on option routes where, you know, you're trying to grant Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown and some other guys some freedom to read coverage and be on the same page as Lamar Jackson. And then ultimately ending up running routes too close to each other. We've seen it against the Titans a couple times. I think the Titans can kind of bait them into that a little bit. So just kind of in terms of not having them on the same page versus maybe lacking some structure in terms of play calling at times, you know, maybe you're giving guys too much of a leash when they've proved you wrong a few times before. So I think those are fair criticisms there. There's some things that I just don't understand. People getting upset about Pat Ricard being on the field, you know, great rushing offenses use fullbacks and it, especially a ailing offensive line to have another 300-pound guy that can come in with a tight end and wall off, you know, a Jadeveon Clowney or a really high level player. We've seen them do that multiple times when Clowney was in Seattle or with the Browns using, you know, two offensive linemen on Miles Garrett and a tight end and a fullback like Ricard and Tomlinson or something on Jadeveon Clowney. So I think that is strange. You know, there's a lot that you can play into that in terms of the run game, in terms of deception in the pass game. And Pat Ricard had a great game against the Titans and the Ravens only Lamar Jackson playoff wins. So at the same time, you know, if the Ravens wanted to bring some fresh blood in and that, you know, figure out the long-term plan for Lamar Jackson. I don't think Greg Roman is the long-term answer ultimately, but a lot of it goes to John Harbaugh, who just signed an extension because Steve Bisciotti never wants to have a lame duck coach. Harbaugh wants to run the ball, have play action off of it, and push the ball downfield with play action. They did it with Joe Flacco. They're doing it with Lamar Jackson. So I think a lot of people's problems with that are a little bit, you know, attached to Greg Roman is kind of like the guy who's a little more reserved. You don't see him in front of the media as much. It's always easy to blame the play caller. It's like the you know, the two most popular guys in town are always the backup quarterback and the next play caller is the old cliche. So I think there's some weird things there and some weird narratives about his time with the 49ers when it was Jim Harbaugh's offense and Jim Harbaugh was the play caller. And people are talking about Greg Roman's play calling in San Francisco when Jim Harbaugh was calling the plays. So there's just a disconnect in a lot of different things. People want to see Lamar Jackson be, you know, that passer against the Colts, that 443 yards, you know, going 37 for 43, whatever it was. But at the same time, it's hard to ignore that he's a top 3 rushing threat in the NFL and in his generation, really. He's one of the most prolific runners in NFL history. He forces missed tackles at a higher rate than anyone. And people are like, well, we don't want him to do that. Well, unfortunately, as good as a passer as Lamar Jackson is, he's a better runner. He's one of the best runners of all time. He's not one of the best passers of all time. He's a very good passer, a very talented passer that can make every throw in the book, especially as he's continued to grow. And finally, you know, T. Martin and Keith Williams come in, and it feels like, you know, the Ravens passing offense takes off in the first half of the season, despite no Ronnie Stanley, no Nick Boyle, no Rashad Bateman, and still ends up getting a ton of burn as soon as things go poorly. It was like, all right, well, it's Williams and Martin doing a great job. As soon as it's running poorly, it's Greg Roman's fault. So, you know, asking him to take a demotion in the end to answer the question, you're either firing him or you're not, to me. I don't think he's going to take a demotion. Marty Morenweg already did that situation, and he left. Coaches don't, you know, do that. You could argue that the Ravens have had enough time to kind of permeate and amoeba Greg Roman's rushing concepts to a degree, but then you go hear Lamar Jackson call him a genius three times at press conferences over the years. You hear Hollywood Brown say something along the lines of, you know, he's got a playbook as thick as a Bible. It's just up to us to show him in practice that he can trust us on game day. Then you hear Mark Andrews say, I wouldn't be the player I was without him. You know, he made me into what I am today and is the reason I'm so great. So I think that Greg Roman has flaws. Certainly, I can understand wanting to demote him or get rid of him. But at the same time, you know, I think he gets blamed a little bit too much for things that maybe aren't exactly his fault, or people don't are unwilling to have conversations about other people.
For me, at least, I think that Greg Roman is not taking that demotion. But here we are now with, I think what my opinion is of it is that the Ravens, their offensive struggles, when it does struggle, it's part of the execution and it's part of the play calling at times. Now, sometimes it's more play calling. Sometimes it's more execution. I'm not going to sit here and blame every struggle that this offense has gone through on one player or on one coach or on one person. But I think that, you know, I agree, Spencer, Greg Roman, for me, not really the long-term answer, but at the same time, it seems like the Ravens are going to keep him. You know, the injuries that this offensive unit went through in 2021 were no joke. And that's why, for me, the Don Martindale timing of the firing was a bit surprising. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think that Greg Roman, if we see the offense struggle early next season, could be the guy that gets axed first, because, you know, then it's like, all right, if you can't do it and kind of have that fall off in the second half of the season and that continues into the first half of next season, then I think it becomes an issue, even if everybody is healthy. That's the key point there. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining, answering some great questions here. What's on the docket for you this week as the Ravens, you know, maybe make a couple of more big announcements here?
Yeah, I'll be breaking down, you know, from Josina Anderson's reporting, it seems like the Ravens will have a new defensive coordinator by this time next week. So going back, watching the tape on whoever that is, what their defense looked like, if it's Chris Richard, you know, looking at his Dallas Cowboys, his Seattle Seahawks defenses, those cover one, cover three defenses. Regardless, it feels like, you know, if they go outside or they hire Joe Witt Jr., then it's going to be some Cowboys tape and looking at what they do ultimately. And then maybe going back and looking at Anthony Weaver's defense in Houston that had a lot of struggles, but you hear J.J. Watt have some glowing remarks. So getting into that, we'll be getting into the Senior Bowl as well, looking at guys like Trevor Penning and Daniel Falele and some other interesting offensive lineman types and some DBs and things of that nature. So we got a lot of fun stuff going on Twitter, at Ravens4Dummies, at BaltimoreBeatdown.com, and getting into it. And I appreciate you. Make sure to go give Kevin 5 stars on those iTunes review charts. Share this podcast with a friend. Reward the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Thanks again, Kevin, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Again, a big thanks to Spencer for coming on. Be sure to check out his work on Twitter and with Baltimore Beatdown as well. And again, if you didn't have your mailbag question answered here today, we got so many of them. It was so great. And thank you for everybody who did ask those mailbag questions. We'll be getting to them throughout the rest of the week. So be sure to stay tuned for those shows. Subscribe on YouTube, like the video. And if you're listening in audio form, be sure to turn notifications on. But that's all I have for you today here on Locked On Ravens. When we get back to tomorrow, we'll be talking about this Ravens team in, of course, plenty of depth. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.